It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Fiona Ritchie from the music program The Thistle and Shamrock joins us to talk about the musical connections between Appalachia and Scotland.
And the sense of connection with the songs is beautifully summed up, the importance of the songs, by a quote from Jean Ritchie from her book Singing Family of the Cumberlands, where she wrote, "The old songs were in our heads and hearts like breathing and were handed down through the generations in a living tradition as if they'd been carried along in a migration stream from across the sea."
On this West Virginia morning. Popular music host Fiona Ritchie has been awarded an MBE, becoming a member of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, as the founder, producer, and host of NPR's The Thistle and Shamrock. Now she's publishing a book that tells the story of the music migration from Scotland and Ireland to Appalachia. Wayfaring Strangers, The Music Voyage from Scotland and Ulster to Appalachia, was co-authored with noted musician and president emeritus of Warren Wilson College, Doug Orr. The book follows music traditions from their earliest beginnings to the influence this music has today. Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr sat down with us to talk about their new book. Why did you want to write this book?
We needed to write this book. This book, I don't think we can pick the starting point when we decided we were going to write this book, but it really is the outcome of decades of conversations between myself and my co-author Doug here, which basically mirrored our own discoveries in the music. I had moved from Scotland over to North Carolina, very quickly realized I was in the heartland of some fantastic music, also realizing very quickly that it was connected to music from where I was from. So I went on a little personal journey of discovery way before you could research these things on the internet to find out all about what this connection was all about. Meanwhile, Doug, before I'd even met him, was very interested in researching the roots of his own family tree, his family originally having come from Scotland on the Scots-Irish migration that we've written about. So when we became friends through a large community of musicians and like-minded souls in Charlotte, North Carolina, we found that we were on these kind of opposite tracks, and we found a lot of great things to chat about. And so about a decade ago, we finally decided that we really needed to somehow work on this together and write a book. So it's taken that long for us to get to the point where we're holding Wayfaring Strangers in our hands, but it is the result of many transatlantic conversations, and quite a few, I might say, also around pub tables and fireplaces.
It was a natural progression, because many of Fiona's Thistle and Shamrock shows have featured the Atlantic Bridge, our hands across the water, making connections. Meanwhile, we were performing music in a band in Charlotte, the theme of which was the connection, doing music of the Appalachian and music of the Celtic lands. We visited West Virginia many times to music camps, making the same connections there. So it just came naturally, and it was certainly a labor of love.
And there's a CD of music with it. Do you recommend that readers read the book, put in the CD, and listen to the music as it is notated in the book?
You know, people might want to explore it. They might want to put it on almost as a lovely kind of textural backdrop to their reading. They might want to read the book and then look for particular tracks. That's why we cross-referenced through the book, so that when we talked about a piece of music, we showed what track it was on. The CD was something that we talked about maybe doing early on, but it felt like we should focus on the book, and maybe that was going to be a bridge too far. And then about halfway through, we thought, you know, we can't not do a CD. But the first thing you're going to want to do when you read it is you're just going to want to hear it and hear what it sounds like and try and make those connections. So I expect people will explore it in their own way, and hopefully it'll enhance as a sort of soundtrack, really, of the book. I mean, we could have picked many tracks. You'll appreciate that it's quite difficult to condense all that onto one CD, which is why we put a discography in the back with some more music that people might want to explore if they're intrigued by the story.
And Beth, CD technology allows for 80 minutes. We used all 80 of those minutes with 20 tracks.
I know that they're all your children and you love them all, but is there a cut of music on this CD that we should really pay attention and take notice of?
I do love them all. Mm-hmm. Can I mention a couple? The Dolly Parton track that opens up the CD. She sings with Mairead Ní Mhaoine of Alton. Mairead sings verses in Irish. Dolly sings the Appalachian verses, all of Barbara Allen, and it seems to encapsulate some of this journey. So, and then what did we find? But we found a lovely version of the tune Wayfaring Stranger played on Scottish border pipes with Appalachian banjo. What more could you hope for? But yeah, there you go. I've failed miserably to answer your question and pick just one, but that gives you a few. One of the things we tried to do with the CD was to show the Scottish version or the Irish version of the song, and then we could hear how it sounded when it crossed over. And a great example of that is the song Gypsy Davy. It originated as Gypsy Laddies in Scotland. It went to Ireland where it became Raggle Taggle Gypsy, and then it travelled over to the United States where it became Gypsy Davy. Some of the elements of the song changed. It lost some of its supernatural story that was in the original Scottish version. It lost all its very dense Scots dialect, and it became an Appalachian song. And we have Julie and Mark here from Little Windows, and maybe they'd like to sing a bit of Gypsy Davy for us.
Please.
Actually, Julie, what can you sing the first verse of the Scots version, which is the Gypsy Laddie? And we know that you're not Scottish and you'll do your best. And then and then go into the Appalachian song.
Great. Oh, the gypsies came to our hall door. They came and they sang Bonnie-o. They sang Say Sweet and they sang Complete. And they stole the heart of our lady-o. Go fetch for me my little white mare, sweetest one of any. And I'll go down to the maple swamp, see if I can overtake her. Straddle-a-lady, lady, lady, straddle-a-lady, lady. Straddle-a-lady, pretty all day, gone with the gypsy davy. Yes, I went down to the maple swamp. There I spied my baby. Straddle-a-lady, lady, lady. Straddle-a-lady, lady. Straddle-a-lady, pretty all day. Gone with the gypsy davy.
That's Gypsy Davy, sung by Julie Glad Weems with Mark Weems, and that's also on the CD, and it's one of my favourites on the CD because it helps to illustrate the journey of the song, starting with the Jack Beck song on the CD and going into Julie Glaub's version of Gypsy Davy. And that song really, if you were to pick one song, that one probably traces out the music migration almost as well as any.
And we need to remember in the music migration, Beth, that this was the oral tradition carried on from generation to generation, family to family. So a family might have been sitting on a front porch in the Allegheny Mountains of West Virginia and trying to recall the words, adding some words themselves. This was the organic process. So when Cecil Sharp came to our Southern Appalachians in 1916 to start collecting, he eventually found about 197 variants of Barbara Allen, for example, because it was a living thing, and families interpreted, names changed. It simply enriched the family tree, or what the great Scottish folklorists call the carrying stream mm-hmm. of the music.
Mm-hmm. As I was reading your book, Wayfaring Strangers, it occurred to me that here in Appalachia, we are very aware of our ties to Scotland and Ireland. Over there, are people aware of their ties to us?
I would say only recently. When I lived over here in North Carolina, I became very interested in those connections, but it was all news to me. You know, when people are living in a country, you're aware of your own history in that country. You know where people have come from and what they've done. But after people leave, it becomes vague. You don't really follow their story. So when I went back over to Scotland and I was doing work on BBC Radio Scotland, I just became really keen on sort of illustrating that. And so I sort of did the Thistle and Shamrock in reverse and started playing lots of American music to try and illustrate the connection. And it wasn't something people were that aware of. Media has changed all that. And people are now able to explore online where music comes from. I would say, though, when you know, that the music migration was very much going in one direction. But when radio first came about and when recorded music and albums were available and people started touring with music, you had people like Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger and Samantha Bumgarner and Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. They would start coming over to the UK and touring around. And so people heard this Americana music, which really resonated with them, and they really loved. And so you had people who were singing Scottish traditional music, people like Archie Fisher, who started to embrace Americana music without maybe really consciously appreciating how it was connected. But I think all the dots have been joined up pretty well now, and people are well aware of it. And we're really hoping that in writing Wayfaring Strangers, and we try to affect a very much a mid-Atlantic voice with it, we really hope that it'll increase awareness back in Scotland and Ireland and throughout the British Isles of the connection and show that it's really a living connection and a musical dialogue that runs both ways.
And another important figure in that story, and going back to the old country, was Jean Ritchie, who in the 1950s, Jean grew up in Viper, eastern Kentucky, but she secured a Fulbright grant to go to Ireland, Scotland, England, and begin recording and tracing the roots of those songs. She learned many of them. She brought them back and landed in Greenwich Village, where she was part of that 1960s folk sing and sharing her songs. But out of the singing family of the Cumberlands, 13 of them in the Ritchie family, they were recording and sharing and making those connections that have just built ever since.
We'll continue our discussion with the Thistle and Shamrock host Fiona Ritchie and musician Doug Orr about their new book, Wayfaring Strangers, The Music Voyage from Scotland and Ulster to Appalachia, in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:42. Dense fog this morning, becoming partly cloudy. A chance of rain and thunderstorms in the northern counties. Temperatures in the 70s today. There's a chance of rain statewide overnight with lows in the 50s. Partly sunny on Wednesday and Thursday with temperatures in the 70s and low 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.
We continue our discussion with Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr about their new book, released yesterday, that highlights the migration of music from the British Isles to Appalachia.
I'd like to kind of stray from the music a little bit. And Fiona, if you would, in Wayfaring Strangers, you have an interview here with Alan Reid, a Scottish songwriter, singer, and keyboard player interviewed in Scotland in March 2013. And he has what I think is a very interesting description of the people who came from Scotland and Ireland to Appalachia. Could you share that paragraph with us?
Yes, I'm happy to do so. Alan played for many years with the band Battlefield Band and toured all around the United States and in through West Virginia many times. And he developed a real sense of the connections that there were between these places and how the music had travelled as they themselves in our time took the music around the world. And Alan wrote as part of, well, Alan spoke to me in the interview and I wrote down what he said. And part of what Alan said was, although I think it's really interesting, this has always struck me that the Scots in particular have been much less clannish than, say, the Irish or the Italians in migrating and setting up their own wee areas, their own parts of cities. The Scots, it seems to me, have been actually more independent and kind of disappeared into the woodwork. And maybe in places like Appalachia, it was quite natural to go up the valley, build your cabin and have your family and hardly see anybody else, which could be good and bad. The idea of not having a big support network that other nationalities seem to have. We have this image of the independent, self-supporting, pioneering Scot that, you know, I guess would build his cabin and set up the fence for the borders of his territory, of his property, and then defend it against all comers. So they would make great pioneers, you know, pushing that frontier forward. I'm not saying it was just them, but they were, I wouldn't say the elite, but willing, desperate, stubborn, aggressive enough.
why that struck me is because up until then, I hadn't thought about it. But in urban areas, you had Little Italy. You had the Irish section, Germantown, Chinatown. I don't think in any urban cities we have Scots-Irish town.
No.
No.
Or indeed Scottish town with the Highland Scots either. They,
yeah.
they tended to spread out. I mean, you did have areas where, say, for example, in eastern North Carolina, where you had Highland Scots who came over after the Jacobite risings and settled in the Cape Fear River area. But even then, they didn't really form a clannish, tight-knit society. They spread out and eventually were moved on when they created the Fort Bragg military reservation. So whatever vestige there was of them was eventually moved on anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, an important part of this story is when the Scotch-Irish made their way down the Great Philadelphia Wagon Road through the Shenandoah into the southern Appalachians. And unlike the Germans, as you say, who tended to cluster, or the English or others, they dispersed. Now, they did adapt and borrow along the way. They borrowed the German Scheidholt instrument and turned it into the Appalachian dulcimer. They borrowed the long rifle. They borrowed the log cabin design. But they were seeking independence and wound up in the coves and hollows of the southern Appalachians, where the old saying was, you had to lie down and look up to see out. Isolated, although their other influences occurred. But, yes, that was a much different story. They would settle along the way, perhaps in Virginia, in farmsteads and clear land, on into the Carolinas, and dispersed. And the old saying was, if you could see the smokestack from a neighbor within 5 miles, it was too close and you moved on.
Well, how did that...
I think also, Beth, sorry, I was just going to say, Beth, I think also that they'd been moved already. They'd transplanted themselves, transported themselves to plantation schemes in Ulster. Things hadn't worked out. There was rent racking. Their church that they had adhered to, the Presbyterian Church, became not the official church of the Ulster area. They then moved on to Pennsylvania, where they weren't able to settle because land wasn't necessarily available, and so they started to migrate south. And I think they had learned not to rely on other people. They didn't feel that there was anyone necessarily looking out for them or their interests, so they had to look out for themselves.
Mm-hmm. How did this idea of moving away, becoming isolated, building your cabin, raising your family, how did that affect the music?
Well, there's an interesting dynamic that runs through the music and the story of the migration, Beth, and that is a sense of wanderlust. They were always looking over the next horizon to Canaan's land, which was in the music in Ulster, for a better life, because they did suffer rent racking, religious discrimination, but also a great sense of place and homesickness. So up to the time they settled in the southern Appalachians, there was somewhat of a longing for the old place, great sense of place, but also venturing into a new land. And consequently, that made its way into the music. For example, there are probably more songs of farewell in the Scottish and Irish tradition than perhaps any in the entire world, be it Jamie Rayburn's Farewell in Scotland, or Farewell to Whiskey, or Farewell to Enniskillen, or Campbell's Farewell to Ireland. They were always saying goodbye, American wakes, saying goodbye to the next generation. So it was a people on the move, and thankfully that dynamic worked its way into beautiful music, be it ballads, stories, or fiddle tunes.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a farewell song that you can share with us?
Oh, of all the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company, and of all the harm that e'er I've done, alas, it was to none but me. For all I've done, for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all.
Let me make the comment about parting glass. It's very old, older than Auld Lang Syne, and traces back to not only to Ireland, but before that to Scotland. And as immigrants were on the move, came into the port of Philadelphia, they would have a parting glass in the local inn or tavern, never to see one another again. Same thing when they left Ulster. So it's a wonderful, beautiful, poignant song of separation.
And the sense of connection with the songs is beautifully summed up, the importance of the songs, by a quote from Jean Ritchie from her book Singing Family of the Cumberlands, where she wrote, "The old songs were in our heads and hearts like breathing and were handed down through the generations in a living tradition as if they'd been carried along in a migration stream from across the sea." So it included songs like The Parting Glass.
Fiona Ritchie and Doug Orr. The book is Wayfaring Strangers, The Musical Voyage from Scotland and Ulster to Appalachia. An absolutely excellent book. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
The book is published by the University of North Carolina Press. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. I'm Beth Voorhees.